listening to Up North News with Pat Kratlow.
Good morning. It's Thursday, August 4th. I'm Pat Kratlow, coming to you from beautiful Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and coming to us now from Los Angeles, California. National correspondent for Courier Newsroom, Kiev Akil. Somebody that I talk to throughout the day, relentlessly, continuously, but in a most two-dimensional way. Like everybody else with Courier Newsroom across the country at Up North News or any of our other places, we communicate through Slack and a couple of Zoom chats here and there. But otherwise, we don't get to have a conversation like this, Kia. So it's really good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you. And thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's something I hope we can chat every now and then because, again, while at Up North News, and yesterday we talked to Isaac Constance from the Gander in Michigan, and we're going to talk to people from the Keystone in Pennsylvania and the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina and so forth. And while each of us, you know, has a state-based team working on the news, we are very fortunate that Kia and other folks also help take some of the national stories and, you know, explain them to us and shape them in ways that help us explain the state impact of what's going on. So we're going to talk a bit about some of the various things that are still either have rolled out of Congress, are rolling through Congress, still stuck in Congress, and, you know, why each one of them is important in their own way. But before we do that, we'll start with the events of this week, which took place by and large not in Washington, D.C., but in voting booths in several states. I always have to remind myself that, you know, everybody votes in November. That's when the general is. But the primary can be anywhere from, you know, May to September, pretty much, or at least August. Wisconsin's used to be in September, and then it was moved back to August 9th. But several other states voted just this past week. And we got some headlines out of those, Kia. We talked to Isaac yesterday about what's happening, what happened in Michigan, and we'll come back to it. But let's start with Arizona, and we'll talk to Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier a bit about that tomorrow. But let's get an overview. It was kind of a big day for Trump supporters and election deniers, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. The entire Trump-endorsed slate of statewide candidates for governor, secretary of state, attorney general, and U.S. Senate all have either won or are on track to win right now. And so, you know, that shows that, you know, even though he's been out of office for, what, a year and a half, and, you know, is still the most controversial figure politically, his political endorsements are incredibly powerful with the Republican base. You know, you've got Carrie Lake, who's looks like she's going to be the candidate for governor, and she's, you know, a former TV news journalist.
The worst.
They really, apparently, can be. Yeah, she is not a traditional Republican in any sense of the word, although I guess that meaning has lost a little bit. That word has lost a little bit of meaning, but she is, you know, arguably the biggest election denier. Her and Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania are the two biggest election deniers running for governor in swing states. And, you know, she has supported a whole host of, you know, radical ideas on education, on gun safety, on everything. And then, you know, in the Senate race, Blake Masters is a former tech executive who's funded by Peter Thiel, who considers himself a populist and a nationalist, but, you know, wants to privatize Social Security, denies the 2020 election was fair, and, you know, hold all the way down. All these candidates are as Trumpian as it can get.
I should explain that when I mutter under my breath, you know, about former TV anchors and politics, I did it yesterday with Isaac, too, talking about Tudor Dixon, the, you know, former media personality turned candidate. And I feel like each time I need the little disclaimer sign, I should hope a little handheld sign with an arrow pointing to me, you know, former TV anchor. So I speak from experience. You know, none of these people should be allowed within, you know, a stone's throw of state office, but the voters let me in anyway for a time. And that's on the voters. Voters in Pennsylvania did earlier, their primary was earlier, put somebody in who, as I understand, he was on the grounds on January 6th on the Capitol grounds as well.
Yeah, Doug Mastriano, who's a state senator in Pennsylvania, and the gubernatorial candidate for the Republican Party, was present at January 6th. He was outside the Capitol and, you know, claims he left before it was breached. But there's been some footage that shows, you know, he was there as police lines were broken. And he is a lot like, you know, one of those Trump candidates in Arizona, Mark Finchem, who's the Secretary of State nominee for the Republican Party. Finchem was also present on the outside Capitol on January 6th. Also a massive election denier who's tried to overturn the election results in Arizona, the same way Mastriano's done in Pennsylvania. So this is a trend. Mastriano was also endorsed by Trump, albeit late in the race. So unlike Kari Lake, who he endorsed, I believe it was last fall, Mastriano got Trump's endorsement fairly last minute and was already the favorite to be the nominee in Pennsylvania. And, you know, he is similar to Kari Lake, pretty extreme. He wants to, you know, cut education funding in half. He doesn't believe in climate change. He doesn't support gay marriage or gay couples adopting. And yeah, he wants to make every voter in Pennsylvania re-register. So it's a trend.
Yeah, it's quite a trend. And it really has played a role in whether the traditional Democratic headwinds are going to exist in the midterms as they typically do. And as I mentioned earlier, tomorrow we'll talk to Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier about that. We will also talk to Up North News reporter Christina Laurie about some of the uplifting stories that she is helping us out with. And our Wisconsin travel writer, Susan Lampert-Smith, will talk as well. I sense we'll probably focus a lot on her most recent story about Minocqua Brewing Company, which advertises itself as the least popular place in town. Kiev Akil is with us, and we will talk more about national stories with a Wisconsin impact coming up next. You're Up North. Akil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, is our guest, talking about things that have been in the news over the past week here. Kia joins us from LA. And before we get back to stories here, I guess I want to find out your own path to Tinseltown and to Courier Newsroom. Let the folks know how you got to be who you are, what you are, where you are.
Sure. It's a fun but strange path.
I got 14 minutes till break, so you just go ahead and
I'll keep it to the short version. But basically, I came to journalism later in my career. It was my second profession, so to speak. I spent my first few years out of college in the entertainment industry, unfortunately, but. I learned a lot from it, and I was a researcher for a writer and an author. So I learned a lot of the skills that helped me as I've become a reporter. So I did that for a few years and then sort of segued into journalism here at Courier. And it's a strange story. I never thought about it. I wrote for my high school newspaper for a semester and hated it. So I never really thought I'd be a reporter, but it's something I've come to love. And just really value that I get to do it for a living.
Well, here's how much we value your research. By and large, at Courier Newsroom, Up North News included, and I know most people don't count words, but you'll get a feel for where I'm going on this. A lot of our stories, like in the newsletter, you know, they're about each story is about 300 words or so. In a social media post, you don't really want to go over, say, 250 words. For our website articles, those can be, you know, maybe 600 to 800 words or so. Kia will turn in one that's 2,500 words, and you won't want to cut a single thing because of the research that he's put into it to explain, you know, any given thing. You one of the first ones you did, I remember, was it for the Keystone, and it was, how do I explain this? It was. How people with disabilities were affected by this policy or that policy. I mean, it was great, and I wish we could have done a Wisconsin version of it. So we really appreciate the work that you do for us. So as you've been researching some of the things that, frankly, are only get headline treatment otherwise, I'll just refer back to our interview with Senator Tammy Baldwin in our first hour. You know, even with as much time together as we had, we couldn't really get into a lot of details on a couple of big things that have come through Congress. And let's start with the one that is getting most of the attention right now, because it is probably, you know, uh, President Joe Biden's, you know, last kick at the can in terms of a you know, broad domestic policy agenda, and it has the name the Inflation Reduction Act. What is it, and you know, where are we at with its current status in the land of Manchin and Sinema?
Yeah, so it is a bill that was put together by Joe Manchin, Senator of West Virginia, and Charles Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader. It effectively is a dual climate healthcare bill that is also reduces the deficit and is funded by tax increases on corporations and the rich. So it's a much smaller, more focused agenda than, you know, Democrats were trying to pass last year, the one that fell apart, unfortunately. But this is a brand new bill that would effectively, you know, keep, you know, last year they lowered Affordable Care Act premiums through the American Rescue Plan dramatically, helping tens of thousands of people in Wisconsin. Actually, I believe it's hundreds of thousands. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it reduced those premiums by giving working class people basically subsidies to afford the cost of healthcare. And we've seen a whole lot more people sign up for healthcare through the marketplace during that time. But that is set to expire, those subsidies, at the end of this year. So the bill would first off extend those for 3 years through 2025, meaning, again, tens of thousands of people would keep their healthcare, and hundreds of thousands in Wisconsin, I'm talking alone, would have cheaper healthcare. It also allows Medicare to negotiate drug prices for a certain amount of drugs starting in 2026, which would effectively reduce spending on prescriptions for ordinary Americans and Wisconsinites by a fairly dramatic amount for those drugs. They have not figured out which ones those are yet, but it'll be very common drugs. And it also, and this is a big thing for seniors, is it would cap how much they spend on prescriptions to $2,000 a year. And that would be beginning in 2025. So that's the healthcare stuff. And then the climate stuff is largely incentives for public and private utilities and companies to transition to solar, wind, and other forms of renewable away from fossil fuels that are causing, you know, climate change and the floods and droughts and fires that we see all across the country and the world. Mm-hmm. It also incentivizes, you know, buying electric vehicles, new or used, by helping giving, you know, when you go to, like, let's say the car dealership, you'd get $7,500 back for a new electric vehicle. It would essentially slash $7,500 from the price, and $4,500 for a used car. And then the tax stuff effectively would adjust some loopholes that, you know, Wall Street exploits, and set a corporate minimum tax, because there's all these companies that, since the Trump tax cuts, get to avoid basically paying what they should be paying in corporate taxes. And this bill would, to some extent, fix that. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
And now, because Manchin is working with Schumer on it, and Manchin had been the impediment to the president's Build Back Better package, the more expansive proposals that he had, Manchin is not the rate limiting factor at this point. Now it's the other, Democrat, we think, Kristen Sinema from Arizona. Yep. And last I heard, still not saying much. So we still don't know if she's on board or if she's going to Manchin this thing.
Yeah, she's been pretty quiet. I know over the last day or so, there's been little drips of reporting suggesting she has a couple quibbles with it. You know, she seems to want to adjust some of the tax reform. Seems to be her hobby horse, which is strange for a former Green Party activist to be that focused on, you know, helping private equity companies pay less in taxes.
Right. But
that's apparently what she's doing. She also wants to put some more money for drought resiliency in Arizona, which that's something that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Arizona's 115 degrees there with shocking regularity. So drought is an issue. But beyond that, we don't really know a lot about where she stands.
And as has happened enough with both of them, have zero optimism, which is not the same as pessimism, but it's, you know, I'm going to believe it when the vote is cast. And I think that's where a lot of us are, talking to Tammy Baldwin. She's eager to head off on her August recess, like a lot of members of Congress, and, you know, just don't know if they're going to be held hostage by one single member, and they can do that. Another piece of legislation, somewhat related in terms of providing incentives for an industry, is the CHIPS Act. Has nothing to do with the snack food and everything to do with the technology that we need for everything from, you know, the computers we are zooming on right now to much more. What is the CHIPS Act about?
Yeah, so the CHIPS Act effectively, you know, subsidizes and incentivizes the creation of these, you know, plants, like production plants, to produce microchips. And microchips, a year ago wouldn't have known what that is. But effectively, if you've noticed in the last, you know, year and a half that the price of a used car has like surged, that the price of, you know, medical, or that there's shortages in medical equipment, or the prices of that have gone up, or, you know, there's been shortages in iPhones, like these chips are in all of those devices. And the vast majority, I don't have the exact percentages, but it's like upwards of 80%, I believe, are produced in Taiwan. And so that means that and during the pandemic, there's been all these supply chain issues on every sort of, you know, technology or product all around the world, especially coming out of China and, you know, Taiwan. And so that's created these shortages during the pandemic. And the CHIPS Act aims to prevent that from happening again. Effectively, it will incentivize technology companies to create these chips domestically, so that there's not supply chain issues in the future. And it also, so that, you know, the US can be more economically self-sufficient and secure. These chips are also involved in, you know, certain national security, you know, production things. I'm not an expert on defense, unfortunately, but it is critical for that. We've seen a lot of senators talk about that. And so it's, you know, it's economic, it will create some jobs, and it invests also about $100 billion in technological development and innovation. And that's not just chips, that's everything. So it's a domestic spending bill to boost manufacturing in the U.S.
It seems like with some other economic sectors, it seems to be a case where enough Americans finally realized, oh, I knew we sent some production overseas. I didn't realize we had virtually all of it there. And, you know, if it got cut off tomorrow, we would be absolutely, you know, helpless and would have to start an entire industrial sector from scratch. And it's a shame that it took a pandemic to disrupt supplies to this point to get some work done. But, you know, maybe that's what it takes. And another thing that has taken far too long is something that deals with veterans' health, those who are exposed to toxic burn pits, and something that, as we've explained on this show a couple of times and over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, this is something that, you know, people like Senator Ron Johnson can claim they voted for it in the end, but, you know, only after they tried to kill it, which, again, seems inexplicable given what we thought we'd learned about how we treat our veterans coming home from Vietnam who were exposed to Agent Orange. So tell folks what the hiccup was and how we eventually, apparently, hopefully, are getting that done.
Yeah, so the PACT Act is this bill. You know, Senator Baldwin was a huge supporter of it. Effectively, you know, it'll make it easier for veterans to get healthcare benefits after they've been exposed to, you know, toxic burn pits, which, you know, were used in Iraq and Afghanistan to get rid of, you know, waste and paints and metals. And, you know, a lot of veterans inhaled this and it's made them sick. It's given them cancer. So the bill assumes that those illnesses are tied to the burn pits and effectively removes barriers to getting care. And so this bill passed the Senate, I believe it was last month, or maybe it was
late June, I think. Yeah.
Late June. Yeah. The months have all coalesced.
Time means nothing now. Yeah, that's true.
So the bill passed in June. There was some, you know, hiccup with the actual language of the bill, so they had to hold another vote. And then that vote happened hours after Manchin, you know, announced this deal. And so Republicans effectively threw a hissy fit and killed the bill for last week because they were pissed and they felt like they'd been had. Thankfully, there was a ton of public backlash and pressure, and they ended up passing the bill this week, and it will head to Biden's desk now because it's cleared the House as well.
Yeah, and again, there was that, when we talk about voting for it or against it before for it, we're talking about whether to, you know, remove the threat of a filibuster, which, you know, again, they can technically say, you know, we weren't voting against the bill, we just wanted debate to continue. You know, people don't. It's just, you're not fooling anybody. Kiev Akil is our guest. We will talk more about what's happening on the national political scene and its impact for Wisconsin coming up after the break. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
And you can reach us by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you ever want to check in with us by phone, 715-388-7155. Kiev Akil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, is joining us from the West Coast to talk about various stories that have been in the news nationally this week. And Kiev, one of your roles for Up North News and Courier Newsroom deals with a polling firm that, you know, helps us see what Americans are thinking about various things that are in the news. I did see that there was something for our Arizona outlet, Copper Courier, recently done there, probably for the Senate race. But there have been several polls that you've worked on. As you've looked at that, and you've looked at the rise of GOP extremism, you know, and how, whether that's going to sell with voters in a general election campaign, what are you gleaning from the polling that you've been looking at so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think two things really emerge when we look at the polling, and we've run polls. We work with, we have a partnership with Data for Progress. They're a polling firm, very, you know, very reputable. And so we've pulled on a whole host of issues ranging from the economy to abortion to LGBTQ rights to different proposals from both parties. And what we've really found is two things. One is voters are very, very concerned about and have been concerned about inflation, obviously. The second thing is they are also really, really, they oppose the Republicans' agenda, like by massive numbers. When they actually are told what Republicans want to do, they, by almost, you know, on almost every issue, it's unpopular. So we asked about Senator Rick Scott from Florida, is the chair of the committee that effectively works to expand the Senate Republicans to win the majority back. And he introduced this plan earlier in the spring that, you know, was enormously controversial because it effectively would, you know, require Congress to reauthorize Social Security and Medicare and every other federal piece of legislation on a rolling basis. So translation of that is the Republicans could kill those programs. That's something they've wanted to do. They've tried to reform them or privatize them for decades. And
something that we said, Ron Johnson just doubled down on this yeah. week on Tuesday, saying that it should be discretionary spending. And again, I'm sure he thinks he's doing the Lord's work by making that kind of a threat. But polling probably isn't real good on, if it's not good on Rick Scott's plan, it's probably not going to be good on Ron Johnson's proposal to make it discretionary every year.
Definitely not. And I should note, Rick Scott is the richest senator in the country, and Ron Johnson's not far behind. So it's, I don't know, I'll leave it to listeners to think what it is that these two guys want to effectively take away benefits from millions of seniors and lower income Americans. And yeah, the polling is like enormously unpopular. And most voters, we asked about this in April, I believe, and 94% of voters hadn't heard of Rick Scott's plan, but when they did, 71 opposed it. And so that's nationwide, that's across Democrats and Republicans. You know, even 62% of Republicans opposed it. So, you know, it's an incredibly unpopular agenda economically. And that's why they try to avoid talking about it, because people hate it.
Exactly. And it really this comes back to, and again, people think that if you talk about process, it's boring. And if you think about, you know, messaging, it's boring, but man, there's not much that's more important than that. We saw this with the Affordable Care Act. When you polled people and said, and you referred to it as Obamacare, do you favor Obamacare? Oh, no, it's terrible. Socialist, blah, blah, blah. And then you explain, well, do you favor this? Yes. Do you favor this? Yes. Do you favor this? Yes. Oh, well, that's the Affordable Care Act. Oh, I like that. Oh, yeah. That's also known as Obamacare. No, I don't like Obamacare, but I like these things you're telling me about in the Affordable Care Act. These are lessons that have been known for the longest time. And yet you have Ron Johnson supported ads running here in Wisconsin, put forth by a political action committee. I believe it's called Wisconsin Truth Pack or something along those lines. And it says Ron Johnson lowered taxes on small businesses, which is technically true, but that sweetheart deal gave a little bit to small businesses and gave a whole lot to billionaires. And a couple of those billionaires formed a political action committee called the Wisconsin Truth Pack that's saying, oh, Ron Johnson lowered taxes for small business, when, you know, the real story is much more. But again, you have to explain that to people when all they have to do is just keep running gobs of these 30-second ads that they have the money to do. I don't know, Kia, that you're ever going to be bored with polling stories, because I think they're going to continue to say, well, if you would just inform us about these things, we would have a very different opinion than just watching the TV commercials.
Yeah. And I mean, that gets at a huge problem in our media and political ecosystem. It's, I mean, multiple problems. We have so much media noise from, you know, Fox News and online social media platforms and right-wing media outlets that, you know, pollute like the information ecosystem. So to the point where, like, Steve Bannon referred to it as flooding the zone, and he was a former Trump advisor and campaign manager in 2016, now under indictment, which is a trend. But, you know, when people are constantly getting fed those ads or fed, you know, memes or all sorts of stuff online, you start to not know what's real anymore and not know what to trust. And, you know, the polling is real. You know, the stories about what Republicans' agenda is real, but it's not sexy. It's not as juicy as I'm sure that ad is, or a lot of, you know, Fox News hits. But, you know, it's true. You know, Ron Johnson helped cut taxes for billionaires and corporations that now donate to him, or, you know, effectively run ads to help him. And that's legal in our system. You know, those people can create those PACs and spend unlimited sums of money under Citizens United, which was a Supreme Court case.
And it does make it a lot easier to flood the zone when you can flood politics with cash.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. Those are my cats being very loud.
No, we're good with the animal kingdom here. It's okay.
But yeah, you know, there will never be, you know, as journalists, our job is to try to cut through that noise and explain what's actually happening. But, you know, it's increasingly difficult to do that. And it's, you know, I understand if you're just a person who's working one, sometimes two jobs to support your family, you know, you're sick, you have childcare issues, it's you don't have time. I think we've all probably had those moments in our life. You don't have time to spend an hour a day sifting through stuff. So you go with what you see on your TV.
Yeah. And that's, They're and now on social media as well. I mean, some of the folks that you know, have supported or helped create Courier Newsroom also have worked on an endeavor that tracks digital ad spending, which is so vital now. It's one thing. I mean, yeah, you can see TV ads, you know, how much they buy, but you can learn a lot by figuring out which campaigns, which parties, which groups are suddenly spending a ton on Facebook ads or YouTube ads. I remember, gosh, we're going back several years now, but I still play Words with Friends and some other games with people going back and forth. And I was amazed, it had to be 6 years ago, that, you know, that a Ron Johnson ad pops up, you know, in between rounds of the game. And that's how digital this is getting, that it's not just the TV commercials, that messaging goes everywhere, which is a lot different than, you know, what a newsroom can do. Although we're certainly doing our part trying to get more on social media all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and you can spend a couple grand on Facebook and reach tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, as opposed to, you know, it differs by TV markets and where you are in the country and what city, but TV ads are incredibly expensive, especially as it gets closer to election day, because, you know, they can, the networks and, you know, the companies can charge more. So it's, yeah, social media arguably is now more, it's not, I don't know if it's more influential, but it's similarly influential to television. And so, you know, you have this, the combination of, you know, cable news propaganda and or just misleading journalism with TV ads that can be funded with unlimited outside dollars, with almost no regulations on social media. You know, Facebook's rules are a joke. And so, yeah, it creates this mess that, like, you're forcing ordinary people to try to sift through, and it's, a lot of people can't do it. And I get that.
Yeah.
So it's
more, it is more cluttered than ever. People feel more overwhelmed than ever. And it is, you know, again, to toot the company horn here, one of the reasons I was so thrilled to hear that an outfit like this was being created to bring news to, you know, social media. Look, I'm not dancing the news on TikTok. I don't believe I've seen you dancing the news on TikTok. Close, I've seen you with the baseball cap backwards while giving us some headlines, but I could only wish to feel that comfortable. But that is the, you know, that is where we are. It's not Walter Cronkite in a suit and tie anymore.
No, it's become totally democratized, which has its benefits and its downsides. And I think we've seen a lot of those, both of on benefits and downsides in the last, you know, half decade. And yes, I have not danced the news on TikTok. I don't think you'll ever be seeing me dancing the news. That I only really dance at weddings, but
we have really good people who are helping us tell stories. You can tell the generational shift in things, you know, like what all the young people first run Facebook, but then my generation got on and they moved to, you know, something else. And then, well, the thing now is, again, many years late to the game, but I've really started, I'm like, these Instagram reels, this is pretty cool. I want to create some reels, which is why the kids have all moved on to TikTok after that. But I think you just have to adapt with each of these platforms. Kia, getting back to, you know, some of the things that, you know, our mainstream values versus what we're seeing in politics. Same goes for gun safety. We've had, you know, no let up, it seems, in the mass shooting scourge around the country. But it is, again, something that polling seems to regularly indicate that Americans, by and large, want us to do something. I mean, anything. And to see the near intransigence from the Republican side, can I continue to find puzzling, like they don't have kids in school or anything like that. I have to imagine you see that trend continuing, that Americans still want to see action.
Yeah. I mean, any poll you look at, people support gun safety laws. You know, it varies depending on, you know, sample size, how many people are asked and, you know, what states and how the wording is. But in any world, any poll shows a majority of Americans want things like, you know, red flag laws to keep the guns out of hands of people who have shown a penchant or have threatened to be violent. They support, you know, assault weapon bans. They support, you know, background checks. And, you know, we don't have any of those right now. And on a federal level, I should say, some states have them. And the reason for that, you know, their Republicans respond to, the Republican base has been louder and more pro-gun and gotten that way in the last several decades. And it's not just the NRA, like the NRA is involved in this, but they've actually gotten weakened in the last couple of years. And now it's just, you know, these hardcore Second Amendment types who, you know, and the Second Amendment made sense back then when you had muskets and militias. And, right, you know, it's a little bit different now in 2022, but, you know, Republicans, the voters, like their most extreme voters, don't want these things. And so for the longest time, they've sided with them instead of the vast majority of their constituents. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a shift now. Things have gotten so out of hand. There are so many guns and these shootings are starting to everyone's going to know someone who's been affected by a mass shooting. One of our colleagues grew up in Highland Park, Illinois, where there was a mass shooting.
Right.
So, you know, it's, I don't see that trend changing, but I'm hopeful that, you know, within the next few years, we'll get more legislation.
It's a shame that it's come to that. But apparently everybody has to be impacted before some of our leaders take it seriously. Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom National Correspondent. So great to talk to you. Look forward to doing it again real soon.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Have a great day. And later on, we'll get to, you know, how a long-suffering Philadelphia sports fan is doing in L.A. But we'll deal with that another time. We will wrap up the show after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat
Kreitlow. Brewers lost last night in Pittsburgh 8-7. They've got another game that starts just under an hour from now as they try to right the ship post-All-Star break. Going to be a beautiful day today and tomorrow before things get warmer and maybe rainy on Saturday. We've talked at a couple of junctions on the show today about internet speeds, and we're curious as to what you have to endure as well. So if you either want to brag up what you've got or tell us where you are and how bad the internet situation is in your neck of Wisconsin, you can write to us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I told you earlier, Luke, about you played the Beatles Day Tripper, and that really it struck a chord with me, no pun intended, because I have to explain now to people of a certain age, citizen band radios or CB radios. It was the, you know, it was a real craze after the C.W. McCall song Convoy, and it seemed like everybody had to have a CB radio in their car. I mean, cellular phones were still, you know, more than a decade away at that point. And people had handles rather than names. What was, you know, in Convoy, it was, you know, Big Ben, this year's Rubber Duck, and so forth and so on. My dad at the time was working on the Chicago Northwestern Railroad, and he worked the line from between Eau Claire and St. Paul. And, you know, sometimes he'd go one way and the other on the trains, but most often he'd, you know, go one way, but then he might have to drive to the other end if he wanted to get back home to Eau Claire, as the case may be. And so he chose Day Tripper as a CB handle, as since he was making day trips between Eau Claire and the Twin Cities pretty much every day. Ironic for a guy that worked on the railroad, and that there is still no rail line for passengers between Eau Claire and the Twin Cities. It's something that, again, we have to talk about these things for a bajillion years before they come about. And I remember working, covering the news for Channel 13 in Eau Claire, and there was talk. There's something called the West Central Wisconsin Passenger Rail Group or something like that. It was just looking into this, and it was something that conceivably, you know, could happen someday. Let's at least get it, you know, to be like shovel ready. Let's do the research on how many people might use it, where might, you know, what tracks might you use, and things like that. And, you know, again, it all seemed kind of pie in the sky that, oh, maybe someday. Then we get to the Obama administration, which actually takes seriously the improvement of Americans' lives and, you know, getting cars off the roads and things. And you had the creation of a high-speed rail plan all across the country, and that included here in Wisconsin. I got to be a little intimately involved in that because it was my time as a state senator. And while I understood, you know, that Amtrak currently uses the route that goes, you know, from Chicago to Milwaukee to Madison to La Crosse, and then up the Mississippi River to the Twin Cities, I was, you know, hell-bent on getting some or all of that rail traffic to come from Madison up to Eau Claire to the Twin Cities, because you're going to serve more of central Wisconsin, you're going to serve more of northern Wisconsin that can come use an Eau Claire terminal. And Of course, that is the route of the old 400. That was the passenger train that ran, in the 20th century, the first big chunk of it between Chicago and St. Paul. And it was called the 400 because it was a 400-mile line and it made the trip in 400 minutes. We should be so lucky to be able to have something like what they had 70 and 80 years ago. But, you know, we certainly were thrilled to see that there was finally some movement, because we've seen how commuter rail can work in places like the Northeast Corridor. We've really seen how commuter and passenger rail can work in Europe and in Asia. And all you have to do is make the commitment, the same commitment you made to build the interstate system, or, you know, to do anything big and grand. It takes some planning and it takes some smart investment. I thought we were finally on the way to doing that. And I remember the day, it was actually in Chippewa Falls when we were joined for an event with Governor Jim Doyle was coming to town. And I knew a couple of the people on his team. They had helped me win election to the legislature. And they just looked like they wanted to burst. They looked so happy about something. And they took me to the side and they said, "We just got an agreement from the Obama administration and from then Chicago Mayor Daley and Governor Doyle about the way that the route was going to partially go through the Eau Claire area on its way to St. Paul. In return, what had to happen was there had to be an extension from St. Paul to Duluth that was accelerated, because the congressman up there at the time, Jim Oberstar, I believe was the chair of the transportation committee. And so, you know, no surprise that he wanted to see that part of the line built. Well, you add that little snippet to the map and suddenly you've got the chair of the transportation committee on board, pun intended. And we had a rail plan that was going to start to be worked on. Until it wasn't, until the Tea Party and other political clouds started to gather on the horizon. You then had the election of Scott Walker in November of 2010, where I was unseated from the legislature, where Dave Obey retired from the legislature, and where Jim Oberstar either retired or was defeated. My memory fails me on that now. Less than a day after Scott Walker was elected in November 2010, he said the first thing he was going to do was scrap the high-speed rail plans for Wisconsin. And I will just never forget the reaction of somebody connected to the West Central Wisconsin Passenger Rail Group was quoted in the newspaper as saying, "Gosh, I supported Scott Walker. I'm a Scott Walker supporter. I never thought he would do this. I never thought he would kill this project that I've worked on for over a decade." And I just remember thinking, really? That you didn't see every indication there that this was coming? And so that group, God bless them, is still working to get something built someday. It will happen. But in the meantime, there are a lot of day trippers still out there clogging the roads, that busy stretch of highway between Eau Claire and the Twin Cities. It is long overdue for improvements that we could get done. Before I finish, I wanted to say, Luke, we were talking about, was it National Beer Day or something like that?
National IPA Day.
IPA Day. So I was reminded that my good friend Kevin, friend since college, I refer to him as my beer Sherpa, because he loves beer and tries to guide me toward new flavors, even though I'm not the world's greatest beer drinker. So he sends me this from the India Pale Ale IPA to say, just as a hint, that this is his favorite IPA. And I sent him back a meme about the right way to drink an IPA. Step one is you open the can, and step two is you see the can being poured down the drain. So, you know, happy day if it's yours, but I'm going to stick with the chocolate chip cookies.
Happy
Have a
day
great
for
day,
me.
Everyone. We will do this again tomorrow morning.